Hi, welcome to the show. We've got a really fun topic today. It's one of Naz's favorite things to talk about, and one of my favorite things to talk about as well, because I was one. We're talking about disenfranchised men.
This is The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. I'm Naz Rantavakolifar, or Naz in short.
I am Daniel Carroll, or Dan in short.
This week, we want to know, what do we do with disenfranchised men?
I don't know.
You should have all the answers done.
You always ask me.
Yeah, well, as the resident male on the show, I expect you to.
Yeah, as the resident former disenfranchised man.
So one of our co-producers, Sam Baker, she had a chat with Andrew Yarrow. He is a former New York Times journalist. He's just put out a book called Man Out, Men on the Sidelines of American Life. So this is quite a big topic internationally, really, like, you know, disenfranchised men, you know, how they're voting, how they're angry, you know, populist governments. But it's kind of interesting, like, each country has its own sort of unique flavor based on the sort of, yeah, based on the local culture, really.
Right, yeah. This is, I mean, I said it earlier, this is like one of your favorite topics. You get quite, you get loud about this one.
Yeah, kind of. Because I feel like, I don't even know if it's disenfranchised men in the way that people like Yarrow are talking about, where, you know, this is men who are not doing well in terms of jobs, in terms of prospects. Yeah, I guess the whole thing of men not feeling good about themselves and taking that out on women is a really big topic. Because I think that's the flip side. It's not just like, let's worry about, it's not just like, how does this impact men? I think when men aren't doing well emotionally, they take it out on people around them. And, you know, there's a lot of studies about this, like, you know, when men are depressed, they tend to lash out. That's kind of a very male response to, like, depression. So that's why I'm especially interested in sort of like men not feeling good about themselves, feeling quite worthless, because it's not just something that affects a guy. It means they're then going to be violent towards partners, they're going to be like disrespectful to women, they're going to go and like vote for, you know, far-right politicians, and that's happening all over the world. So it ends up affecting everyone.
Yeah, it's one of these things where it's easy to go, well, you know, what's the harm, right? Because,
right,
I mean, like, it says men on the sidelines, right? You're like, well, they're on the sidelines, who cares? But
they're not.
A lot goes on the side. Right, they're not.
Yeah, a lot goes on the sidelines that affects everyone else, right?
We say they're on the sidelines, but it's almost like they're the coaches.
Right.
They're the ones over, they're not in the game, but man, do they have a lot to say about it.
And like
a lot of influence.
And end up disrupting everyone else's experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like the drunk guy in the stands throwing a bottle.
Yeah, but then we have to be sensitive about it, because it's also like we can just dismiss that or think, why does someone feel that way?
Right. Right. Well, and how do we get them to calm down?
Okay, so Sam has done a really good interview with him. She is going to join us afterwards. The three of us are going to have a chat about what we do with disenfranchised men. So we're going to hear from Sam a little bit later. First, we're going to get a little bit of housekeeping out of the way. We have a Patreon page. We would love your support. We spend a lot of time putting this podcast together. All your support really, really helps. We have linked to it in the notes to this show. Check it out. There's a bunch of different perks and things in there.
Yeah, and while you're looking around on that, you could be also composing some thoughts into either a review or a email to us. There's links on our website where you can like click and write to us, or you can just email thegenderknot@gmail.com and tell us what you think. We'd love to hear it, especially if you are like this topic. You feel like you're a man on the sidelines and you don't know what to do to actively contribute to solving some of this stuff. We'd love to hear. And we're putting together a listener show where we're going to be talking with some of the people that have written to us and responding to some of your feedback. And so this would be a great opportunity to send some.
Yeah, and we might even get a few of you on the show, and then you can you can tell us what you think to our faces.
Or at least to our ears.
Okay, so let's move on. Sam had a chat with Andrew Yarrow. The three of us will be back after the conversation.
With so many women entering various professions mm-hmm. and coming up the ladder, like, and you know, women still don't get paid as much as men, like there's mm-hmm. still inequality there, but with more mm-hmm. and more women being in the workforce, like, has this kind of forced some men out? Is there kind of a limited resource there, and how, if that is the case, how do we kind of deal with the fallout of it? Because obviously we still want women to advance professionally, but these men may be feeling like there's not a place for them anymore, or they're also maybe not willing to go into jobs, conversely, that were stereotypically female jobs, such as nursing or teaching, or mm-hmm. How do we deal with that?
Yeah, definitely. You touch on a lot of key issues. You know, certainly it's been great that women's labor force participation moving into jobs, into professions has, you know, gone way up since the 60s, although even that has started to turn down slightly in the 21st century in the U.S., the percentage of women in the labor force in the U.S. But, you know, also you see, I think this is true in Britain as well, but certainly in the U.S., the numbers of women doing well academically are far outstripping the numbers of men. It's about 57-58% of college graduates today are women, and whereas, gosh, 45 years ago, it was about the opposite, you know, 57-8% men. And, you know, a lot of younger women are having more success getting into the labor force. I mentioned, you know, the issue with millennial men. Mm-hmm. Millennial men or younger men are more likely to live at home, live with parents or relatives than young women are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can fall back on stereotypes of, you know, these guys waking up at noon and having their moms make their breakfasts and, you know, going down and gaming or whatever. Yeah. But a fair amount of that, I mean, things like the gaming are real. And there are, you know, some darker issues with the internet. But, you know, I think on the issue of whether women have taken men's jobs is kind of a matter of perception. I don't really think so. But I know that a lot of the several hundred men I talk to in the course of researching this book, reporting for this book, felt that women had taken their jobs mm-hmm. or that, you know, women were now getting the better jobs. And, you know, there's actually data now in the big metropolitan areas in America that among workers under 30, women actually slightly out-earn men. I mean, mm-hmm. that starts to change in the 30s, you know, childbearing and yeah. and the rest. But, you know, that's a big change, certainly.
That makes sense. And I guess I'm thinking back to a talk I was at recently with an older, quite accomplished woman mm-hmm. in journalism, and she was saying, you know, kind of with equality, we've gotten to this place where really successful, hardworking women get really far professionally, but really successful, mm-hmm. hardworking men still get far as well. Whereas mm-hmm. the real shift is that the mediocre men that maybe used to be able to stick around no longer can because it's just gotten more competitive. And I thought that was really interesting, and I'm sure frustrating if maybe you were in a place where you kind of were sliding by or like doing just enough mm-hmm. and now that's no longer good enough, and how that's kind of changed.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, Sam. I mean, there are, you know, I've talked to a lot of employers who would say, and human resources people, that, you know, younger women tend to seem more driven in their work, that, you know, a lot of men, you know, and this gets into sort of dangerous territory, but has the work ethic declined? Has a sense of responsibility declined? And, you know, I talk in my book about the interactions between culture and in the anthropological sense and economics. And, you know, I think that there certainly have seen that there are not only economic reasons that have pushed men out, the deindustrialization, the decline of middle skill jobs, decline of unions, but also on the cultural side. And this is something that conservatives would emphasize more, but I think there is truth to it, that issues of responsibility have and hard work, or values of those, have seemed to decline in a lot of ways, and particularly for younger men.
Can you give me kind of an example of that?
Well, a great example is, looking at the world of online gaming. There are about 15 million hardcore gamers in America, overwhelmingly men, though more and more women are getting into gaming. But there's a very interesting study that looked at, some of these hardcore gamers and, asked them, wouldn't you prefer to have a job, to be spending 6-8 hours a day gaming? Mm-hmm. And a narrow majority said, no, I'd prefer to be gaming. And it's hard to entirely attribute that to declining work ethic or what some people might even call laziness. But
it's kind of a chicken and egg situation a little bit, like you don't know.
Yeah.
What's causing what necessarily? It was interesting as well. Like, I think that statistic of this generation is doing worse than their parents, and that's the first time in history that this has happened, has been pretty popular in the media lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about it as I was reading your book, and when you do think about gender and break it down that way, men are not doing as well as their fathers. But when I think of women of this generation, professionally at least, and obviously I'm measuring success on an income and professional basis here, and that's not all there is to life, but they're achieving more than their mothers did. And so you have these two groups doing kind of the opposite, or, moving in the opposite direction of the success levels of their parents, when you do split it by gender, which is kind of...
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Sam. I mean, when you look at wage data, male wages in America have been pretty much stagnant since the 1970s. But, looking at the bottom, again, 40 to 60%, they've been declining over the last 45 years, whereas women's wages have risen by about 30%, but from a much lower baseline. I mean, women are still behind, but, it's the issue of progress. I mean, who's making progress? And again, come back to education. Women are making huge progress in higher ed and in the professions. And, men at best are treading water, and at worst, a lot of them are really kind of drowning or on the edge of drowning, which is not good.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting reading this book. I've been really interested in this type of topic for a while, but I also found myself kind of continually coming back to this point as a woman. I work really hard. I have, a certain lifestyle. Why should I feel bad or want to help this group of men? And I can intellectually see the problems with that, but I do think there is a gut reflex on the part of a lot of women to be like, and probably, if you're looking at the stereotypical Trump voter of white middle and lower working class men, like minorities probably might feel the same way as well. But just kind of like, why should I care, and why should I go out of my way to help this group when I'm also working very hard?
Yeah, no, an excellent question. 70 years ago, the great feminist Simone de Beauvoir wrote in The Second Sex, "Why write a book about men?" And, she was largely right then, because, most of history, virtually all was about men and white men. But you know, things have changed a lot. As I'd said earlier, the fact that women overall may be doing worse doesn't mean that we should ignore men who are doing badly. And the fact that men are doing badly also hurts women, children, and society, because you find a lot of angry men and men who are pretty misogynistic, which I write about a good bit on the internet. I mean, there have been all these death threats, you know, sexual threats against journalists, men making them against ex-wives or partners, you know, revenge porn. I mean, there's some very dark corners of the internet, you know, some call it the manosphere, where, you know, it's like out and out hate of women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not good for anyone. And also, you know, men not being able to at least be one of the providers. Of course, they were traditionally the primary provider. But, you know, if they can't be at least one of the providers for their children, I mean, that's not great for children. Mm-hmm. And you know, which gets to other issues of, you know, this huge rise in non-marital childbearing. You know, back when I was young, it was kind of cool to cohabit, to live together. But it's, you know, things have changed. It's a very different socioeconomic pattern today. It tends to be, you know, working class and poorer people who, you know, are having children outside of marriage. And these cohabitations tend to break up pretty quickly. Most do not stay together after 5 years with a child. And so, you know, most of the children now who are not living with two parents are not children of divorce, but children of these so-called fragile families. And, you know, this can also get into issues of, well, do men need to be more responsible? Or, you know, women have some responsibility too. But, you know, these are all things that are hurting a broader population, women and children, beyond just men.
Yeah. And this will kind of further change society and snowball almost potentially in the future if we don't kind of address it.
And further divides society, further exacerbate inequalities.
Yeah. So something you just said before, though, was really interesting to me about, you know, men obviously historically kind of being the breadwinner and maybe not even sharing in that anymore. And it almost reminds me, and you mentioned her book in your book, but Betty Friedan and this kind of like sitting at home and feeling like you're not participating, and it almost has that same kind of boredom and sadness feel to it that her book had about women in the 50s and 60s. And I wonder if it's emotionally kind of tapping into similar thoughts.
That's another excellent point, Sam. You know, as you probably know, in Betty Friedan's book, she used the memorable phrase of housewives living in a comfortable concentration camp. And yeah, I mean, the bored and kind of under the thumb of their husband's wife was, you know, was a pretty typical and was, you know, not a terribly happy situation for most women. That there is a bit of a reversal today. I mean, not that there aren't still a lot of women who are staying home or working from home. But, you know, one of the things that really struck me and kind of led me, one of the other tributaries that led me to this book beyond the labor force issues, was just starting to hear anecdotally from, you know, so many women in like their 40s or 50s saying these similar kinds of stories that their husbands had stopped working. You know, maybe they quit their jobs in the HAF. Maybe they thought they were going to create the next big thing, mm-hmm. which is probably like a 1 in 100,000 chance. But, you know, they wind up kind of literally or metaphorically in the basement. You know, many of these women would tell kind of tragic stories of, you know, these discovering their husbands late at night who weren't working, you know, trolling for other women, looking at pornography, drinking heavily. And so, you know, for a lot of these women, it was the reason they were ex-wives, they, you know, were kind of tired of taking care of the men in their lives.
Yeah.
And some of this applies to parents of millennials as well.
Mm, sure. Yeah, kind of similar caretaking mm-hmm. roles mm-hmm. there. And that's interesting because there was one statistic that really jumped out to me about 10 million men say that they don't have anyone to turn to in a time of need, mm-hmm. which is just kind of striking and really quite sad. But then when I was thinking about that a little bit more, I was also just thinking about, do we need to have a broader, you know, national or international, I guess, conversation about mm-hmm. working on men's social skills? Because I was thinking about mm-hmm. maybe you have an example of a guy who feels like he has no one to turn to. But I was also thinking, has anyone ever turned to him? Like, is he providing that support for someone else as well? Like, it's a bit of a two-way street in terms of having support systems in our lives.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. There's a pretty common line out there that if you ask a straight man who his best friend is, he'll say my wife or my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. You know, if you ask a straight woman, they'll say, you know, any number of other women. And I note that President Obama's last Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, argued that loneliness is one of the biggest public health hazards mm-hmm. in the U.S. And a lot of that's very gendered. I mean, men are less likely to kind of get together and confide with other men. You know, some of this gets back to norms of traditional masculinity. There are a lot of institutions that used to exist for men. I talk in my book about fraternal organizations like the Rotary, the Elks, the Lions, that have just cratered. And they were, and even unions. In the late 80s, the courts forced all of these organizations, probably correctly, to admit women. And, you know, I had men saying to me, the only reason, you know, my Rotary Club is still alive is because the women do all the work. Mm. And but they're just not really places for men to go for many men to go.
Yeah.
There was a great, well, a sad story of a man who told me that, you know, you look on the refrigerator at the calendar and my wife has, you know, her book club, her girls' vacation, mm-hmm. or girls' group vacation, you know, has this or that meeting and there's nothing for me, as he put it. And I think, yeah, men's social skills need to be developed better, and I think that also ties into issues of masculinity, of needing to change some norms about masculinity, that it's okay to confide in others, it's okay to express feelings, it's okay to have friendships that aren't just about sports or drinking or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking as like, I mean, you know, one piece of the puzzle in trying to fix some of these issues. You know, we've had now decades of teaching women to work harder professionally, and this is what you've got to do to make it. And even from a young age of like, you can do anything you want to do. And we almost need the flip side of that, with men in terms of like healthier social situations and making that a more normalized conversation, not kind of a taboo topic, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, men's mental health is a big and hidden issue. Suicides and overdoses and alcohol dependence. But that too kind of falls back to masculine, to some extent, to masculine norms. Men are much less likely to report that they're depressed, even though there have been some surveys like the National Social Survey, which is a good source of data, that, you know, have found that the number of men who say that they're unhappy went up from about 9 to 20% over the first 15, 16 years of the century. But, you know, most men are not going to go out and seek a therapist, or not going to seek, I shouldn't say most, but many more than women are not going to seek help. You know, the idea, a man should be stoic, a man should be tough, you know, kind of man up to things.
Yeah, we haven't necessarily, while we've changed a lot of that language and expectations for women, it maybe hasn't changed for men as much.
That was Andrew Yarrow. Yeah, what do we do with disenfranchised men? How is this affecting you both?
I mean, it doesn't really affect me personally.
Do you feel disenfranchised?
No. I suppose there was probably a point in my life where I did. Like, that's the thing. Like, I listened to this and I read some of the book, and part of me is just like, yeah, been there. It's called being 25 and a loser. Get your shit together. You know what I mean? Like, there was a part where Sam was talking to him about, like, as a woman, like, why should I care? And I was like, well, as somebody who's been there and got out of it, why should I care? I don't know. Like, I obviously it affects society as a whole if it's a quarter of men and men are half the population, we're talking an eighth of the population is like bitter and like angry and like hates everybody else. Like, that affects us all. But at the same time, I don't know, man, unless we can come up with like a root cause and start working toward a solution. Like, I don't know what the point of like analyzing it is.
Okay, because I have this thought often, maybe because I'm not into being too compassionate to people, because I think it's a disincentive to people getting their shit together. But because, and Sam, you brought this up as well about like guys feeling a bit left out and they're getting left behind, and sort of why should women care and stuff.
Yeah, I think I still am struggling with that question walking away from the chat. And I think the subject's really interesting, but like, I don't want to expend my energy necessarily on helping these guys. And especially like one point, I forget if we actually talked about it, but in the book, he talks about how these men like don't organize themselves and, you know, are lacking advocates. And it's like everyone else who has fought for their rights organizes themselves and they are their own advocates. So like, I don't feel like I need to go do that for disenfranchised men. Like, yeah. who are they waiting for, kind of?
Yeah, but also I don't know, I feel really confused about this, because obviously it is a problem. It is going to affect people like you and me, Sam, because
and yeah, society overall. Like,
yeah, I mean, let's just go there, right? Like, it's not even disenfranchised men, it's the sense that guys of our generation aren't as good as the women, let's just say.
Yeah.
It right? I mean, that is the feeling. It's like, okay, so we do better at school, we're smarter, we're doing better in the workplace, we're really driven. And this is a conversation that happens with the women I know all the time, where it's like, the guys around me, my peers, they're not on my level.
Yeah.
And I want to start a family one day, and I'm just looking at them thinking, with any of you?
I do feel like I have definitely been in those situations before where you look around and you're like, wow, all of these women are so amazing. And you're like, maybe 1 out of 10 of these dudes are. So like, how's that going to work out for anybody?
Right. So this is actually like a social problem, because we're not even talking about like the guys I'm talking about. They're all like educated. They're doing relatively well career-wise. But even them, it's like, none of you have your shit together anyway as much as your female peers.
This is what happens when a certain group of people has been in power for too long. They get lazy. Do you know what I mean? It's like y'all used to have with kings out there, right? Where just after a while, they were just like inbred and decrepit and like just gross and like couldn't even like stand up straight because they didn't have to anymore.
So wait, okay, the guys you know. Okay, so you said like a lot of these problems we're talking about in the culture in general, right? Because I think we talk about men not doing as well and stuff. You're like, that's being 25 and a loser. So what encourages these guys to get their shit together? Because I think if the cult, if there is a bit of a push towards let's understand why these people feel this way, like, does that actually help them or not? Let me put that another way. I feel like when I look at older men, they always talk about like, oh, you get to a certain age and you want to have a family, so that kind of forces you to get your shit together. I don't know if that's happening for younger guys today or not. Like, what would help them? What would help them get their shit together? Do you know what I mean? What's like the?
This is going to be a pretty nihilistic answer.
going to say we're all going to die anyway.
This problem is not going to be fixed by the people currently in the positions getting their shit together. It's going to be fixed by them dying.
What do you mean?
The thing is, the only way for people to ever be motivated to change is for their position to get so bad that they can't take it anymore. And one of two things happens when somebody gets to a place where life is so bad they can't take it anymore. They change or they die. And that's it. Or it never gets so bad and they just keep like living in their mom's basement and playing video games. Enough of them are just continuing to do that forever and it never gets bad enough. And then some people, it will get bad enough and they will change. And some people, it will get bad enough and they will die. And that's it. Those are the three outcomes. And you know, we have to change things in society to stop people from going down that path.
Path?
The path of like becoming a disenfranchised man. And I think a lot of it comes from like how men are raised or how boys are raised to become men, which is this idea that like we have to be strong and we have to be proud and we can't talk about our feelings. And like if we can't fix a thing, it's because we're bad and not because like maybe we're just not good at fixing things. And what happens is like these dudes, I think, get in this place where like they don't feel useful because we're told as boys growing up that we have to be like the best boy. Do you know what I mean? And if we're not, then go sit in a corner because if you're not the starting quarterback, nobody needs you.
Yeah, but I think we women are raised to be really perfect and we manage to sort of get our shit together. I don't know. I'm a bit unsympathetic about like, oh, boys are raised to be X and it's like women are raised in really maladaptive ways.
I don't know if you heard the part where I was like, they're going to just die and who cares? I'm not sympathetic either. I'm not pleading for these poor boys. I'm saying that they either need to get their shit together or die and get out of the way. But we need to change how people are raised to stop this from happening in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of it comes at that kind of stage, and I don't know how we encourage that, raising boys differently. But I do think there's a bigger spectrum of what's acceptable for women, whether you want to be like super hardworking, career driven, or like you want to be a struggling actress in LA with, you know, no work or whatever. Like those are still both societally acceptable, I guess. Whereas I feel like men, there's like more one path. And if you're not hitting that, it's not really like, okay.
Yeah, it's funny because so I grew up in the UK, so different context to what Yara's talking about, but like I went to like a very academic school and I'd say maybe half the girls or more at that school are kind of like, you know, they're doing well, but they're not like super great career women, and that's absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. And it was like I think the equivalent boys school across the river, that would not be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, having a good job, okay. Like, would not be okay.
But also, like, nowadays, and this is obviously like a newer development, women can work in fields that were traditionally male fields, whereas like I think it's much less societally acceptable, which means men get less fulfillment out of taking jobs that maybe are traditionally female, whether that's like teaching or nursing or like whatever, but like that there are actually jobs in, like if we want to look at the economic angle of it.
But okay, so Dan, you're like, these guys, they either have to change or die, or they'll keep being mediocre, right?
Right.
Which is
right.
kind of and like a slow death. Where does that leave like people like me and Sam who are just like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, that's still annoying.
I think it means you got to start banging younger dudes. Because these, I'm telling you, like these kids that are like 20 now, they're really coming in hot. I know some 20-year-old dudes with their shit together. It's impressive.
Well, but you think that's because they're 20?
I think it's because men are nowadays being raised with like a deeper emotional vocabulary. You know what I mean? Like we always make, I don't know if we always make fun of, but like there's often made fun of, you know, this idea of like how parents are raising their children now, which like they, like instead of like disciplining them, they're like, well, let's have a conversation. You know what I mean? But I think it's creating more emotionally aware children. And I think that boys of, you know, the newer generations are going to be a lot better as members of society
because they're being raised by women who are frustrated with the state of men, and
the kind of men that those women want to raise children with.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like when you talk about like none of these guys are good enough, I'm talking about the 1 in 10 guys who are actually good enough to like land the type of women that want to raise children.
Yeah. Guys, can I say something? I'm going to say something totally separate.
Yeah, please. I'm going nowhere with this.
So even though I'm into not being massively overly sympathetic to people, I will say, though, like in the majority of cultures, what you do as a guy is a big deal in terms of like you show your self-worth. You show your self-worth through doing, often through jobs and work, right? Mm-hmm. And I think your society is especially pronounced with that, like more than, like, I'm okay, so my background's Middle Eastern. Yeah, what a man does as a career is important, but also being a father is important. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think your society is super into like doing and getting shit done, and you show your worth through work. I mean, capitalism, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know, even though I am to a large extent unsympathetic because loads of people have been suffering, there is something quite existential, though, about like all these men who suddenly, you know, don't really have that level of that avenue for self-worth. You know, I do think it is a legit existential issue that's going on.
I have two thoughts on that. First, he talks about those other things as well, like being involved in your community, being a father, like being engaged and finding your identity from those other things that you do in your life. So I don't think it's just the job thing or like the economic kind of focus.
Because, okay, I'll be really honest, and I don't want to go into details. I've been close to a couple of American guys who've had this problem of like career not going as well. And there's something very existential with them that I haven't seen as much with guys from other cultures. Because I do really think your society has a big focus on, especially on men, like getting their self-worth through what they do. I do think that is a legit thing. So even though I'm like, these guys are whining, I don't know, that is a legit thing. And maybe it says something about, I don't know.
But okay, so this is the other thing I was thinking of. So on a more like an example that I have from a past job was like, we had this IT guy who like clearly had been there for a long time. He'd come in the probably 90s when like they were needing to build that infrastructure, and he was kind of like frustrated and didn't work well with anyone, but also wasn't willing to like update his skills or more importantly our system so that it was a nice place to work on our computers or whatever. But like, I feel like that was such a case of him being mad at everyone else for like not taking the initiative to move further, you know, like I do think some of the onus is on these guys. It's not.
No, I'm not saying it's not, but I do think it is a legit thing where if you've grown up in a culture where so much of your self-worth comes from showing yourself through your work and the economy's screwed, like that is a big sort of existential dilemma you're having, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's great.
What do you mean?
Like, it sucks that individuals have to suffer. Like, that's never good. But, like, we built a shitty system. We built this system that was designed so that white men could succeed on the backs of literally everyone else. And then, you know, 50 years ago, other people started going like, well, hey, I'd like to actually, like, be successful as well. And now fucking white men are realizing that the system that they built can't sustain everybody being on top, and they are suffering. And I think it's fucking awesome.
Well, wait, so when you talk about change or die, it could be an incentive to...
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I've been there. Like, I never, like, took on any social services or anything like that. But, like, I lived in a car when I was 23 years old for, like, a year. Because I was at a place where I didn't have any skills and I didn't want to get any. You know what I mean? And eventually it got to a point where, like, I had to do something, and I was, like, working in warehouses and, like, moving furniture and shit. Like, it was just pathetic, gross job. I mean, they're not pathetic, but, like, I went, like you, I went to a nice boys' school where, like,
which explains a lot.
Yeah, I know, right? But, like, when you talk about, like, your experience at the girls' school and how a lot of those women are doing fine but not necessarily in a professional career, I went to a boys' school where you, to do fine, you must be in a professional career. And I was not that. I was not that person. I worked on moving trucks in Brooklyn. Life had to get to a place where I was going to get better or I was going to die, because there was no way to get worse. And so I got lucky and I made a decision to get better, but not everybody's going to do that. And I've seen a lot of people, specifically, like, in my experience around drugs and alcohol and stuff like that, who have chosen to not get better. And it sucks. It really does. But, you know, sticking with the no sympathy, like, we either fix ourselves or we don't, but no one's going to fix us.
No, I agree with that and stuff, but not if then these guys are going to take it out on women, right?
Blame other people for their...
Yeah, like they're gonna
situation.
They're gonna vote for politicians who take away women's rights. They're gonna be physically violent towards women. I mean, I don't know.
Violent on the internet.
They're gonna be exactly violent on the internet. Like, I get what you're saying and I agree with it, but, like, the other side that you don't see because you're a man is that a lot of disenfranchised men take their shit out on women. It's like, right, okay, all these guys are going to vote for, like, candidates who will take away women's rights. All these guys are going to be physically violent towards women. They're going to be abusive towards women. My experience, I feel like I've personally had so much experience of dealing with men's shit about how much they hate themselves, it being dumped on me, and me spending years in therapy trying to, like, deal with some guy's self-hatred, you know? And I think every woman has stories like this of, like, just having to deal with how much some guy hates himself. And so, yeah, then it just becomes a bit complex. Like, yeah, I agree with this sort of, like, either you die or you change. And it's like, yeah, that's great. But in the meantime, like women have to bear the brunt of that. You know what I mean, right? So you've got to go sort it out. It's on men to, like, sort each other out. So that, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree. I think it is, like, it is the responsibility of the privileged class to, like, stand up for the underprivileged. But, you know, I don't personally know what to do.
I think we maybe just need to get through a generation that remembers a time when mediocre guys could get ahead and have really amazing places in society, to a point where that's not remembered anymore, and everybody just has to work hard, and those who do the best succeed the most.
Yeah. I think we just need to go back to like an agricultural society. We all just need to farm and like...
You sound like a proper hipster now. Are you going to like go, you know, be like, oh, I'm going to move to, I don't know, Wyoming or something and like...
Or like Boise. I love Boise. That's our show for this week. Our guest was Andrew Yarrow. My name is Daniel Carroll. You can call me Dan.
My name is Naz Rantavagolifar. You can call me Naz. Our fantastic co-producers are Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell. We will be back next week. Speak to you then.
See ya.